Boker Tov, and welcome back to another in our ongoing series of Shirim on Daf Yomi. We are now on Yevamot Daf Pei Zayin Amud Bet, at the beginning of the 10th Perek, and really at the beginning of the final segment of Masachet Yevamot, which occupies the last 7 Prakim, and deals with the topic of what we refer to as Edut Isha, or the problem of Aguna, of a husband who has gone off and disappeared, and there are reports that he has died, under what conditions she may remarry, under what conditions that remarriage is invalidated. And so we will begin with the Mishnah, which is really two Mishnayot, Haisha Shalach Bala, Limedinat Hayam. Uvau v'yamru la'meit ba'alech v'niseit. Now, that opening phrase is a little bit confusing, and the Gemara will immediately define what the circumstances are, more based on possible elimination from other statements as opposed to the statement itself, and I'll explain. Ba'u is plural. They came and told her, Meit ba'alech, your husband is dead, and then v'niseit, and then she got married. Who told her? We will find out that what happened is really there was one witness, and we will find out, perhaps, what sort of witness it is. One witness came and said that her husband had died, and the Beit Din then gave her permission, or without the Beit Din's permission, we'll see how this plays out, v'niseit, and she remarried based on the notion that she was a widow because her husband had died. And then the tragedy is compounded when v'achar kach ba'ala, after she is married, and then her husband, who we thought was dead, then shows up. So the halakha is tetzei mizeh umizeh. She has to leave both of them, meaning that she cannot remain with the second husband, because after all, her relation with him was one of adultery, because she was married to the first man. She can no longer be with the first man, and this based on the premise that I put on top of the page, that in the case of adultery, even if it is inadvertent, meaning even if it was based on the premise that her husband was dead, nonetheless, the halakha is asura la ba'al v'asura la bo'el. She is not allowed to be with her husband, and she is not allowed to be with the one with whom she had the adulterous union. She needs a get from both of them. Now, this is a little bit strange. To say that she needs a get from the first husband, I understand, but my havamina might have been that the marriage would have been somehow dissolved. All right, so the answer is it's not, and you need to get to dissolve the marriage. However, why would she need to get from the second husband? After all, her marriage to the second husband was all a mistake, and kiddushin are not tofes. If you give, if you have a marriage with a woman who's currently married to somebody else, nonetheless, she needs to get. And towards the end of this morning's podcast, we will clarify why. Now, ve'en la ktuba, v'lo perot, v'lo mezonot, v'lo bla'ot, lo alzeh, v'lo alzeh. She does not have any claims of a ketubah. We'll get the perot, mezonot, and blot in a second, from neither. Meaning, of course, she has no ketubah from the second husband because that wasn't a real marriage. She doesn't have any claim of a ketubah from the first husband because the first husband is obligated by law to divorce her, and any time that we obligate the husband to divorce her for anything save his own malfeasance or his own misbehavior, he does not have to pay the ketubah. Part of the reason for that, of course, is that ketubah was instituted, in the famous words of Chazal, by Rabbi Shimon Shatach, k'dei shelo tekala be'einav lo'tziyah. It shouldn't be too easy for a man who gets mad and suddenly on the spur of the moment divorces his wife. If it's going to cost him a lot, he will think twice. But in this case, of course, we are forcing the divorce because of the adulterous union. Good. Perot. Perot means as follows. When a woman brings in nichse malog, which we discussed a couple of prakim earlier, nichse malog into the marriage, the perot are eaten by the husband. In other words, the husband gets to use the benefit of the perot, and she can now not claim any of that back. She cannot turn around and say, well, any of the perot that were used, I want them back because I'm being divorced. V'lomazonot, she's not supported at this point onward. The husband does not have support her as far as food goes. V'lo bla'ot. Bla'ot are the tattered remains of Nichsei Tzon Barzel that the Chachamim ordained should go to her in case of a divorce. In this case, they do not, from either husband. Now, v'imnat la'mizeh u'mizeh tachzir. And don't make the assumption that this is mamon ha'mutal b'sofek, such that if she was to grab it, then it would be hers. And he would have to prove that it comes back. No, if she took ketubah money or mezonot, etc., from either one of the husbands, she has to return it. It is 100% belonging to the husband. Now, v'havlad mamzer mizeh mizeh. Let's clarify. If she had kids with the second husband, then the child is a mamzer, clearly because it was an adulterous union. Children she had with the first husband are not mamzerim. When do we say the children with the first husband are mamzerim? If she went back to the first husband, then they are mamzerim. But we have to figure out why, and that's something that we will get to beginning at the next podcast. Everything, by the way, from here on in to the end of the Mishnah and Mishnah Bet is going to be analyzed in the next podcast, so I will go through it much quicker than the first part of the Mishnah, and then in the next podcast, review it. Either one of those husbands who happens to be Kohanim, if she dies, does not go to her funeral, does not mitame for her. And none of them have any rights. Lo b'mitziata, if she finds something, lo maseyateha, her earnings, lo b'farat nedara, or to disavow her vows, or to dispel her vows. These are all rights or rights, really, of the husband. They do not have those rights anymore. Haita bat Yisrael, nifsal min akunala. So let's say this woman was a bat Yisrael. Then she is now never able to marry a Kohen because she is considered a zonah. Now, in addition to that, ubat Levi min ha-maaser. This is, of course, continuing to follow the Shita of Rav Meir that maaser is something that can only be eaten by Levim. If she's about Levi, then by having this bia, she now is invalidated from maaser. Ubat Kohen min ha-truma. In addition to being a zonah and not being able to marry a Kohen, she cannot eat truma. Now, ve'en yorshin shel zev, yorshin shel zev, yorshin ketubata. This will need some clarification because you just said she has no ketubah. So now, yorshin shel zev shel zev, meaning that if either one of the husbands dies, then his children are not yoresh her ketubah. And we will see that this is talking about ketubat banim dichrin, which we'll clarify, of course, in the podcast in which that piece of the Mishnah is analyzed. And now this, of course, all Tanakhama. From here to the rest of the Mishnah is going to be several dissenting opinions. But according to Tanakhama, if either one of these husbands dies, the brothers gives chalitza and not yibum. Now, of course, we could ask the question, why would the brother of the second husband have to do any chalitza whatsoever? Her marriage was never valid. There should be no zikat yibum there at all. And we will discuss that. Now, Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Tanakhama and says, Ketubata nichsei ba'ala harishon. She says she does have a ketubah, and the ketubah comes from the first husband. Rabbi Lazar omer, harishon zakam siyata maseyatel fafrat nedareha. And it sounds as if Rabbi Lazar is taking Rabbi Yossi one step further and saying that the first husband does have all of the rights of a husband, of her metziah, maseyatel, etc. Rabbi Shimon seems to take it even one step further, which is biata o chalitzata mi'achav sharishon poteret tzarata. That she is fully married to the first husband, such that if he dies, then and one of the brothers has bia with her or gives her chalitza, that sarot or pater, which means she is a regular wife like any of the other wives. And then we will see. It seems as if Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Shimon are adding on in that order to the intensity of which they are suggesting that the first husband is the real husband, and then the coup de grace is where Rabbi Shimon adds, "Ve'ein havlad mimenu mamzer," that if she goes back to the first husband and has a child with him, that kid's not a mamzer. Right? Halacha, by the way, does not follow any of these opinions; follows Tanakhama. Ve'im niseit shelo bershut muter lachzor lo. This is the end of the first Mishnah, and this is Rabbi Shimon who says, "Ve'im niseit shelo bershut," meaning that if she married shelo bershut, meaning it was not because the Beit Din Paskin that she can marry, but what happened was two witnesses came and said, we saw your husband die, and then she went and married, then she is totally anus, and she can go back to her first husband, lechatchila, and resume regular marital relations with him, and she's fully his wife, and the other we consider just to be some sort of an ones. That's Rabbi Shimon. Now, the next Mishnah adds in one further twist. If she married, in the case in our first Mishnah, if she married the second guy, and then the first husband showed up, and she married because the Beit Din, based on one person's testimony, or whatever reason, the Beit Din said she may marry, then she has to divorce, but she and the adulterer, as it were, second husband, does not have to bring a korban chatat, Lo nisei, of course, they wouldn't have to do anything more severe because it was all b'shogeg. Lo nisei tal pi beit din, but let's say she did it on her own. Teitzei v'chayevet b'korban. Then she has to leave, and she is chayevet b'korban because she did it without the reshut of the beit din. Yafeh koach beit din shepotra min ha-korban. And then this sort of almost editorial note is you see that the beit din has one leg up on doing things on your own, is that they exempt her from the korban. We will see why. Horu ha-beit din li-nasei. Last point in the Mishnah is, let's say that the beit din, and this is somewhat of a strange statement, let's say that the beit din said, yes, based on this testimony, you may marry. V'halcha v'kilkala. So as she assumes now that means, according to the beit din, she is a free woman. Her husband's dead. And instead of marrying somebody, she went and had an affair with an affair. She had a non-marital tryst with someone. And then the husband showed up. Then chayavet b'korban. She's chayavet korban for that non-marital, which now turns out to be an adulterous relationship. Why shalohi tiru ha'ilan linasei? Which means because Beit Din's permission was only that she can go and get married. But that doesn't mean, which means that, of course, if a husband never showed up and it turned out he was really dead, or we'll never find out, but he never shows up, then, and after the Beit Din issued her this permit, she went and she slept with a man, or slept with several men, she's not chayav anything. It's a behavior that we would frown upon, but once the husband shows up, then any one of those acts is an act for which that she's chayav a korban for, because the only thing the Beit Din did permit her was to get married. All right, good. Let's see the analysis. And again, it's only the first few clauses in the Mishnah that will be analyzed. Since at the end of the Mishnah Aleph, Rabbi Shimon said that if she marries Shelo Birshut, she can go back. Shelo Birshut Beit Din Ela Be'edin. It must be that means that she married without the Rishut of Beit Din, but she had Edim. Michal Dereisha Birshut Beit Din Uveidecha. That means that our first case, as I mentioned, is that the Beit Din instructed her to marry. And it must be that they instructed her based on one witness. Alma Eirecha Neman. So what do you see from here? And this is a basic principle that will drive all seven of these prakim, or most of them, is that one witness is trusted as far as the testimony that a wife has died. Utnan Nami, we have an open Mishnah that says, Huchzakul Hiyot Mesina, Edmin Pied. We have a tradition that they marry a woman, they allow a woman to marry, if they have testimony of somebody who heard from another witness who saw the husband dead. Vishami pi isha, even if one woman says she heard from another woman that she saw the man die. Vishami pi evan pi shivcha, or a woman said, I heard from a slave that saw him die. In other words, we're accepting any sort of information, even only one witness, even hearsay testimony, or secondhand testimony, really, even from people who are not otherwise accepted as edim. Alma erechad meheman. So clearly, you see, one witness is believed as far as testimony of a dut mita, death, the testimony that the husband has died, to allow her to marry. Utnan nami. Now we have another Mishnah, which may or may not be of the same cut. Erechad omar achalta chelev. One witness comes up to a man and says, the meat you ate was chelev. V'hu omer lo achalti. And the guy says, I didn't eat that piece of meat. Patur. He's exempt. Tam adamar lo achalti. This is a Mishnah in Kretot. The only reason he's patur is because he denies it. Ha ishtik meheman. So if he says nothing, then the other witness is believed. Alma erechad meheman midoraita. So what do we see here? That we are obligating someone to bring a korban chatat for something they're doing based on one person's testimony. Menala. Now how do we know that you could be chayav? After all, the pasuk clearly says, I didn't put this pasuk on the page, the pasuk clearly says, al pi shnayim edim yakum davar. And the several psukim of that sort in Sefer Dvarim. Lo yakum edachad b'ish l'cholvon l'chochatat. Right, al pishnayim edim yakum davar, etc. You need two witnesses. So how do we know that one witness works? Titania, in the parsha of chatat kvua, it says, Ohoda ilav chatato asher chataba. If a person sins and doesn't know about it, and then he is notified about it. What does that mean? Not that other people inform him, but it becomes known to him. What does that mean? I might think that he's even exempt if one person says. Meaning, so not that other people informed him, but one person informed him, you ate this thing, you didn't know about it, or you're Mechal Shabbos, you didn't know about it. I might think that even if he does not challenge him and deny it, he's still patur. Meaning it became known to him. Hechidami. So the simple pshat, the way they're reading is hodailav means it became known to him, he looked on the calendar and he figured out, or he checked what was on the package and he realized it was chelet. But it also means if somebody tells him, he is not patur as long as he doesn't deny it. Hechidami, so ilay medu'atu trevelo kamachish lehu. You're telling me two people came and said you ate chelet and he doesn't challenge them. So kral amali, what are you need a pasuk for? Obviously he's chayiv. Elolav chad, it must be one person came. And it's only if he does not challenge them that they're believed. So in other words, this pasuk that says oh dai lav means that if it became known to him, and the idea is if it became known to him and he didn't challenge it, then he's chayav. So what's the case? If it's a case of two people, so you don't need a pasuk to tell me if two people come up to you and said you were mechal Shabbos and you don't deny it that you're chayav. So it must be a case where one person came, because it can't be zero people, because who's the hodai then? So it must be that one person came up to you and told you that you're chayav, and you didn't deny it, therefore you are chayav. So you see, one person is believed. Now, umayim mishum deheiman, but your construct is not so clear. Who says that the reason you're chayav is because this witness is believed? So mishum dekashatik, ushtika kodar damya. Maybe it's because really the one that's generating the chiyuv is you. Because this person comes and says you ate chelev, and your silence means, yes, I ate chelev. And then it's like hodat valdin. It's like you yourself are claiming you ate chelev, and that's why you're chayiv. Right? Teda diktani seifa amru shayim achalta chelev umer lo achalti patur. Reb Meir mechayev. Because the seifa of that mishnah says that if two guys came and said you ate chelev, and he says, I didn't eat, he's still patur, but Reb Meir says you're chayav. Now, continuing on, amru Reb Meir kal vachomer. Two people can testify that you killed somebody or Michal Shabbos and get you executed. So certainly two people's testimony should be enough to bring you to a korban, which is, according to everyone, less severe than getting you killed. So their response is that this time the fellow has an out. Instead of saying, I didn't eat the chelev, he could say, I ate it b'mezid. And there is no korban b'mezid. Which means that the fellow, this is sort of a pesha asar, or amigo, is that because the fellow could have given a response to them that would have gotten him off the hook, and didn't, therefore we believe him when he says, I didn't eat it at all. Now, resha, ma'itam ekam achavi rabbanan. So why do the rabbanan, here's the point, the rabbanan say that if two people come and say, you ate chelev, and you, even if two people come and say, you ate chelev, and you say, no, I didn't, you're believed. But in the Reisha, if one person comes and says you ate chelev, if you don't deny him, you're chayev. Ilam mishum de meheiman, if it's because that person is believed, v'atreba alma d'alfakav d'kamachish lo inu meheimni. But remember, in a regular case, if two people come, even if you deny it, they're still believed. V'kapatu rabbanon, and the rabbanon here exempt you. Elam mishum de ishtik. So it must be that the reason that you're chayev in the first case is not because that witness is believed. Because after all, even in the case where there are two, where normally your denial wouldn't mean anything, and yet here it works. So here, when the one person comes and says you ate chelev, it's not because he's believed, it's because of your silence. Which means now, let's go back and say as follows. We have really one large question here, and we've gone a little bit off the path. The large question is, why is one witness believed about edut isha, that a man has died and then allowing the wife to remarry? We added into that a parallel case in Kretot about one witness coming and saying to a man, you ate chelev and he's chayev a korban if he doesn't deny it. And we went through it and we said, perhaps in that case, the reason that you're chayev a korban is not because the one witness is believed. And horaya to that is the Rabbanan's position in the Seifa. Since the Rabbanan and the Seifa say that even if two people come and say you ate chelev, and if you deny it, you're not chayev. So clearly it's not their words that are being generating it, but it's your response that's generating it. So it's your response of shtika in the resha, your silence in the resha, which is generating the chiyuv, because it's like you're saying, I got this information and I'm confirming it, and I'm the one who's generating the chiyuv. So really the issue of chelev doesn't speak to our problem. Good. Ela svarahi. Right? It's a svara, midu havi achaticha, sofek shel chelev, sofek shel shuman. This is a basic principle of Eidachad Neman Bisurin, which is you have a piece of meat, you don't know if it's chelev or shuman, va'ata Eidachad v'mar, bari li d'shaman shuman hu. One person comes along and says, I know for a fact that this stuff is kosher. The meheman, he's believed. After all, every time we eat in somebody's house, including our own house, we're basing it on Eidachad Neman Bisurin, on the person who's preparing the food and has been watching the food. Right? So one person One person says, I know for a fact that that meat is kosher, and it doesn't have a chazaka either way, it's kosher. So meat dami, but you can't compare the two. Hatam like chazik isura. In the case of the meat, we didn't have any status to it. We didn't know if it's kosher, treif. It's a piece of unknown meat. Hachay chazik isura de shirish. But here we have a woman who, until we had information about the possibility of her husband dying, she was a 100% eshet ish, and she had that chazaka. So here, you can't have one person come along and their testimony say, I know for a fact that her husband's dead, uproot her previous status, which is a well-entrenched muhzak status. And the general rule is that anything that is davar shebe'erva always needs shtayim, always needs two edim. So halodami al-chaticha vaday dechelet. Now, the real case, the analogy, is if you have a piece of meat that's for sure chelev, and one witness comes and says, I know for a fact that it's kosher. We don't believe him. We have a piece of meat that has a chazak of being treif, you need two witnesses to testify that it's not. So, but the truth is that if we have a piece of meat that we know is chalev, even if 100 witnesses come and say it's kosher, it's still not believed because it has its own inherent status. But in our case of death, and that's the critical difference, is a piece of meat is either kosher or treif, and whatever it is remains that way. I mean, truth is, it can be kosher and become problematic by contact with other things. But if it's treif, it can never become kosher. As opposed to a woman who starts out her life as single, and at one point gets married, and maybe again becomes single, and becomes married again, it's a status which change is built into it. So the comparison is going to be a little bit more difficult. So therefore, to say that our case is really like a piece of chelev, that somebody comes and testifies as Shuman is also not the same, right? Now, if two people came and said, we know for a fact that the woman is divorced, and we know that the husband died, we would believe them. So we should also believe one. Just like we believe about Tevel, if somebody says, I separated Trumot, and about Hekdesh, and about Konamot, in other words, any of the ritual status of anything. And let's see, let's say about the tevel. What's the case? Day, if the food is mine and I testify that I separated Trumot and Masrot, sure, Mishum Debiyad Olatakno, because that's something that's in my control. I could fix it by separating Trumot and Masrot, therefore I'm believed about it. That's not the same as here. It's not up to this person it's not within his purview to kill the husband and therefore be believed that the husband's dead. Ella da'acher must be that the case of Tevel is where I'm testifying about somebody else's food. So my kasavar, what is it you hold? It's a machloket. I kasavar tar mishalal shal chavero and usarich dat bailim. It's machloket about whether or not if I come and separate Trumot u'Masrot from your food without you knowing it, is the hafrasha valid? So if you say, inotzarich dat bailim, I don't need your consent, shum zivayal de l'takno. So it's the same thing. It's just like my own food. It's something that I could fix. Since I could fix it, therefore I'm believed about it. The ikus of a tzarech dat balim, and if on the other hand you say you need the clear consent of the owners, and I come and say, I happen to know that the guy separated Trumot and Masrot, so he gufim an alan. So who's to say that that's true? Who's to say that I'm believed to say that somebody else separated Trumot and Masrot? If we hold that I can't separate Trumot and Masrot without his consent, which means it's not within my control, within my purview to control. So let's ask the second one. Hekdesh nami. Ikedushat damim, if it's kedushat damim, and I'm claiming I was makti, that we all know I was makti this thing, and I claim I was poded, I redeemed it, mishum d'yado liftoto, because it's up to me. I could be poded if I want to. I could go up to the gizbar and say, here's the money and a fifth, and I'm redeeming it. Ikedushat aguf, if on the other hand we're talking about an animal, ididei, if it's my own animal, mishum d'yado lichuli ali, I could go up to a chacham and say, I regret having made the hekdesh, etc., and do shelat chacham like you would do with a nether. Ela dacher must be kedushat aguf, because by the way, kedushat dam, anybody could be poda. So if I say that couch, which I was makdish, or somebody else was makdish, I know that it's chul and you could sit on the couch and you could sleep on it. That's because I could have redeemed it myself. So of course we believe you. So if on the other hand it's an animal, and I say v'amar yadana be di itchel mariale, and I happen to know that the owner did Sheilat Chacham and remove the Kiddush of the animal, so he gufam an alan. Again, how do I know that that's the case? How do I know that it works? Konamot nami. Let's go to the same thing with konamot. Things that you aser via neder. You say that this bread is asur to me, for instance. Ika sari yesh mi'ila b'konamot. There's a discussion in Nedarim about yesh mi'ila b'konamot, meaning if you violate a neder, are you chayev a korban mi'ila? U'kedusha darim nachtalahu. So if you say that konamot, the object of Nedarim, have kedusha darim to them, and therefore if you use them inappropriately, it's mi'ila. So mishum diviyadu liftoto, because then you could redeem it, very simply. But if, on the other hand, you say Nedarim are some independent Isser, nothing to do with the Beit HaMikdash, nothing to do with Kodshim, and it's an independent Isser that's on there. So if it's my own Neder, so of course it's my own Neder, I could do She'ilat Chacham. Ella da'acher, must be that it's somebody else took a Neder, that this thing is ushered to everybody, this coffee machine is ushered to everybody. And I cannot, If we hold that ain k'mi'ila b'konamot, then I cannot be poda the coffee maker. If on the other hand, and if it's not mine, then I cannot be go ask it, which means there's no way that I have control over it. So he go from an alan. So here we go. Who's to say that I really can be poda? Now, when we said ain echad neman b'tevel b'hektish b'konamot, what we've just said is yes. But if we're talking about, for instance, the case of tevel, somebody else's stuff, and you hold that you can't take somebody else's stuff without asking them. Or in the case of Hektish, if you hold that, that if we're talking about Kudushat HaGuf, and it's somebody else's thing, or if it's Konamot, if it's somebody else's item, and you say, En mi'ila b'konamot, then in every one of those cases, who's to say that Eidecha Neman? So the answer is that that's really not going to be our proof. And we come down to the following thing, which I summarized in half a line on the page. Amar Rav Zeira. And this is an important thing to remember. The answer is that Eidecha Neman, in the case of Edut Isha, is not the same as Eidecha Neman Bisurin. And here it's coming from a whole different perspective. And that is that because the consequences of believing such a witness erroneously are so severe, therefore, we're lenient with her in the beginning, meaning that because if she believes this one witness, and based on that, she goes and remarries, or the Beit Din believes the one witness, and she's willing to accept, she knows that she's remarrying based on one witness who came to the Beit Din and said, I saw the husband dead, then she's going to be, and she knows that if in case that testimony is wrong, she's going to be so, so messed up in her life. She won't be able to live with her husband, nor with the new husband, and the kids may almost there, et cetera, et cetera. She's going to be very, very careful to substantiate this testimony before she moves on it. So the answer is, lo lechmer v'lo lekel. So why don't we just leave things status quo? Don't be so machmer on her at the end. Don't be so lenient with her at the beginning. And let's wait until we have two witnesses. The answer is, mishumi guna, kilu ra'abanan. Very important rule. The Rabbanan do not want a woman to have to sit around waiting when her husband, who went off on a trip, disappeared, and was only one witness saw that he died, waiting for some non-existent witness to never show up and say that he's actually dead, to be a second witness. So Rabbanan said, any testimony that we have, even if it's not a normally reliable witness, and even if it's a witness heard from another witness, and if it's only one person, etc., we'll accept it, and we're going to let the woman know, you should know that you're marrying based on one witness, and you should know these are the consequences if, for some reason, it turns out the witness is wrong and your husband shows up one day. And so she will be very careful. But we, of course, we do want to allow her to marry. And that is the line that Mishum Iguna Akiluba Rabbanan. Okay. Tetze Mizel Mizet. The Mishnah said that she has to leave both husbands. Good. Amar Rav. Lo Shanu Ela Shiniset Bed Achad. Rav says this is only true if she married based on one witness. Aval Niset Apishne Edim Lo Tetze. He's saying that if she married, and this statement itself is preposterous, as we'll see in a minute, and then we're going to fix it, Rav seemed to say that if she marries because two witnesses came and so we saw your husband dead, and she marries another guy, and then the husband shows up, she doesn't have to leave her husband, her second husband. Machachu aled marav, and Eretz Yisrael laughed at this. Ata gavri v'koi. The man is standing there. Ata mart lo tzitze. Her husband shows up, and you're saying she doesn't have to leave her first husband? So now we have to adjust Rav's statement, because Rav certainly wouldn't say something like that. We have to figure out what he meant. Lo tzricha delo yadinan lei. All right, this is a case where we do not know the husband. All right, in other words, we do not know the witnesses. E delo yadinan lei be'erachad amaytetze. Sorry, just to clarify, deloya dinan lay, meaning we don't know the husband. So when this fellow shows up and says, I'm the husband, Then what Rob, at this point, what Rob is saying is, if she married based on two witnesses and a man shows up and says, "I'm the husband," and we don't know who he is, then lo tetzei. So if it's a guy we don't know, how come, even if she married based on one witness, why should she leave? So lo tzricha da'atu beitrei ve'amri. So here's the case. We have to keep modifying it. Two witnesses came and said, two, of course, always means two or more. We were with this guy from the time that he left until now. You guys don't know who he is, but we could testify who he is. The famous story that Yosef, when he left his brothers, the simple shot in the text is that Yosef, who left as one of the brothers, was now dressed up as a regent of Egypt with all of the finery, and they didn't recognize him. All right, but there's a famous drash. This proves that when Yosef left, he did not yet have a beard, and when by the time they came to see him, almost 22 years later, they came to see him, or 20 years later, he had a beard, and so they didn't recognize him. But in any case, it's certainly possible that a husband lived in a particular town and left for a while and disappeared, and then the word came out that he was dead, and then she married, and then he shows up a little while later, and then you recognize him. All right, sof treu treininu. But if that's the case, then that means we have two witnesses who said he died, and she married based on that, and then another two witnesses who come and say that fellow who showed up really is the husband. So therefore, it should be that the second husband and the woman are chayev ashram talui, because you have shtayim versus shtayim. In other words, shtayim versus shtayim, two witnesses said he's dead, and two witnesses said, no, here he is, he's the living man, create a halachic suffix. So Amar Rav Sheshet, Kingon Shenise lachad meideha. Talking about a case where she married one of the two witnesses who testified that her husband was dead. Because that witness, of course, is claiming that he is 100% sure that the husband is dead. He testified that the husband is dead. He's 100% sure that the husband died. And you cannot obligate somebody to bring an Asham Talui about something that they are 100% certain about. Asham Talui is based on the idea, I also don't know if I violated the law. Eitz Meat, I don't know if it's Chela Veshuman. I did an activity. I don't know if it was before or after Shkia on Friday. Good. So now he goof of Asham Talui Kaima, but nonetheless, the woman has to bring an Asham Talui. How could you say Lo Tetzei? So the answer is Bomer Barili. When the woman says, "I know for a fact this isn't my husband," so if the woman is saying, "I know for a fact this isn't my husband," she has two witnesses that the husband is dead. She married one of those witnesses, then, and everybody is sure about it, and this fellow shows up and says, "I'm the husband," and he has two witnesses who say he is, why should we believe them? And by the way, afilu Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi lo ka'amar, elek shebao edim achakach nisit. We'll see what this is. There's a machloket between Chachamim and Rabbi Menachem Rabbi Yossi about under what conditions and in what sequence of testimony and marriage we make her separate. We'll see as follows. Here we go. You got a double knockout. Two guys say he's dead. Two people said, no, we saw him and he's not dead. They can't say he didn't die. That's not testimony. They have to say, we saw him after the date you said he was dead, and we know he's not dead. Or two people came and say she was divorced from him, and two say, no, she wasn't divorced from him, meaning they have to testify, we were there at that particular moment and there was no divorce taking place. Hare zulo tinase, because you can never testify to a non-event. Hare zulo tinase, tinase lo tetse. So she cannot marry a second husband, but if she does, lo tetse, because shnayim u'shnayim. Nachum Rabbi Yossi amar tetse. Nachum Yossi says, no, she does have to leave. And then he clarifies, Nachum Rabbi Yossi, ematani omer tetse, when do I say she has to leave? Bizman shebao edim v'charkach niseit. When the testimony, when the witnesses came, and then after these two and two came, she then went ahead and married anyways. And so we're sort of fining her. Aval nisit v'charkach bao edim, but if the first two witnesses came and said he died, and then she married, and then another two witnesses came and said, no, he's not dead, then arizulo tetse, she doesn't have to divorce. So in other words, even Rabbi Nachum Rabbi Yossi would agree that if she married and then the two witnesses came and said, here's who the husband is, she doesn't have to leave. So, kika amar Rav, nam bizman shebao edim, v'chakach niseit. So when Rav said that if she married based on two edim, he's talking about a case where the first edim came, she got married, the first edim came, and then the second edim came and said, here's the husband, and nonetheless she got married. Lafukim Rav Menachem Rabbi Yossi. And he's saying his point to support Chachamim against Rav Menachem Rabbi Yossi, It says that even if all the witnesses came before she got married, and nonetheless she married anyways, she does not have to leave her second husband. Vikadamri, some people can actually read Rav the opposite way. Tamad, and he said, V'chakach ba'u edim. That Rav said the only case where I say that if there were two witnesses and she married based on the two witnesses, she doesn't have to leave. That's only because she got married before the other witnesses came who said, here's the husband, we know who he is, and he's alive. But if all the witnesses came and then she got married, then we force her to separate. Keman k'rav Nachum Reb Yossi. So either Rav is supporting or opposing k'rav Nachum Reb Yossi, depends how we read his statement. Now, all of this is challenged by Rava. Maitiv Rava. Minayin shiv lo ratza dapenu. How do I know that if a Kohen, so I'm going to Kohen, is married, let's say, to a Grusha. We're talking about just an illegal, an illicit marriage. He's married to a Grusha. How do I know that we force him to divorce her and we don't allow him to say, you know what, I don't care about being a proper Kohen. I don't care if you take the avod away from me. I'm staying with her. How do we know that we force him? Talmud Lomar v'kidashto. That's why the pasuk, the third pasuk on the page, about a relationship with the Kohanim is, we have to sanctify him. Meaning, bal korcho, we have to force him to maintain his sanctity. So, hechidami, what's the case? Ilei medolo niseit le'achad me'edav alo ka'amar barili. So, we're now reading this case about a situation here where the Kohen is, if you will, the second man in this relationship. A woman's husband supposedly died. We're not sure. She married a Kohen, and then the husband shows up. So now, what's the case? If we're talking about a case where she did not marry one of her witnesses, and she didn't say barili, in other words, a normal case, so you have to tell me that we forced the Kohen to divorce her? Obviously, any man would have to divorce a wife, that's our Mishnah. It must be a case where everybody is 100% sure that the husband is dead, because she married one of the two witnesses, so he's sure, and she claims, barili, I know for a fact that that's not my husband. Uktani dapenu, and nonetheless we said dapenu, which means we still force it, which goes against Rav, because at least the way we constructed Rav, because it means that even if she married one of the two witnesses who said her husband was dead, and even if she says, I know for a fact that my husband's dead, and that guy's not my husband, if she came with two witnesses came and said, that's the husband, we still forced them out. That's the dapenu. Amavkin and Lamina, so you see that we forced them out. So the answer is Isser Kahuna Shani. This is a little bit different because we're talking here about Isser Kahuna. All right, that's answer one. Maybe the penu doesn't mean we forced them out based on this. Maybe the force means that we look and we search and we try to find more edim that can clarify whether the husband is alive or not. And really, if we can find out for sure that this is the live husband, then we'll force them out. The other third possibility is, this is talking about a case where all the witnesses first came, both sets, and then she married, and it's like Rav Nachum Reb Yossi, and that is that we will force them to separate, and of course here the Kohen is no different than anybody else. Ravashi Amar, so Ravashi then comes and gives a different explanation to Rav. Ravashi Amar, my lo teitze dekama Rav, when Rav said, Bishnaim lo teitze, means lo teitze mehatara harishon. It means that she is not taken out from her original heter, meaning that the original heter, which was that when the first two witnesses came and said that her husband is dead, so she does not leave her heter harishon, meaning she can go back to the first husband. In other words, the entire time we were reading Rav as saying lo teitze, as being she doesn't leave her second husband. And that's what the laughing, if you will, in Eretz Yisrael was. How can you say the first husband shows up and say she stays with the second husband? So we went through all sorts of different gymnastics, if you will, to try to create a scenario where she was sure and her new husband was sure that the original husband was dead and this fellow is a charlatan, etc. Rav Ashi has a whole different way of reading it. He says, what does lo teitze mean? Lo teitze me hetera derishon. She doesn't leave her original status of being mutter to her original husband, meaning that if she married based on two witnesses, she married another guy, her husband shows up, her second marriage was a total onus because she had two witnesses. She wasn't relying on some sort of a bidyeved and some sort of a special circumstances. She was doing things based on the norms of Shnayim Edim. Her husband walks in, So according to Rav, she can go back to her first husband, and all the rules of the Mishnah, Haftetze, Mizeh, Umizeh, Avlad, Mamzer, Mizeh, Mizeh, etc., do not hold. And it is akin to the opinion that cascades and eventually culminates in Rav Shimon's opinion in the Mishnah about the regular case, which is that she really does stay with her first husband. All right? Ha Amar Rav Chadazimna, but Rav already said that once, that na, Niseit Shelo Bershut Muter Lachzor Lo. Niseit Shelo Bershut, which is at the end of our Mishnah, and that's from Shimon's opinion, she can go back, meaning, Shelo Bershut, meaning if there's two witnesses, she did without the Beit Din, it's just the two witnesses, she can go back to her first husband. Rav Huna Amar Rav, Hayachi Yochatan, Rav said, that's the halacha, we pass like Rav Shimon. So the answer is, Chad Michlal Lach Lachavir Taitmar, you're right, that Rav said, lo teitse, meaning lo teitse mehetar arishon, is a consequence of the fact that Rav Paskin the Rav Shimon in the Mishnah. Amar Shmuel, Oshanu Elo Shalom Machashato. Shmuel then adds, says that this is only true, meaning everything in our Mishnah is true, if she doesn't deny it. Meaning she doesn't say, no, that's not my husband. Of Machashato, lo teitse, she doesn't have to leave. But my skin, so what's the case? Elam may betray, you have two witnesses who come and say, your husband's alive. How does it help of her to deny it? It must be one person. So David the Mechashato, it's only because she denies it. Hashatka, so if she says nothing, Tetse, so obviously that means that if she says nothing, she does have to divorce, even if only one witness came and said, no, your husband's alive. V'amar ula koma kom shemina Torah edachad reikan shnayim. But that doesn't make sense because Ula made the famous statement that says everywhere the Torah gave credence to one witness. For instance, Eid of Tuma and Sota gave credence to one witness. That witness has a status of two. Ve'ein dvar shalacha makom shnayim, which means when the first witness came and said your husband's dead and we're saying he's believed, that means that witness is like two. And when this second witness comes along and says no, your husband's alive, that should be like echad makom shnayim, shouldn't be recognized at all. That the first witness who came to say she was dead, that her husband was dead, was somebody who was pasul eidut otherwise, a woman, a slave, etc. Anytime where the Torah, and this is not like Ula, anywhere where the Torah gave credence to one witness, then you just follow a majority of voices in the court. Whoever gives more, there are more people who are saying one way or over the other. And therefore, if you have two witnesses, two women coming to testify against one man, it's like two men against one man. In other words, once the Torah said that you don't need to follow the norms of Eidut, then we don't have the same rule that says if you're kosher Eidut, you're part of this group of kosher, and I don't care if there's two or 100, it's all considered to be the same. A group of two versus a group of 100 is equal. And if you're invalid, you're out of the picture. Rather, if the Torah accepts normally invalid witnesses for testimony, then that means that what we're concerned with here is voices. And the more voices that the majority of voices say he's dead, then that's what it is. And therefore, two women versus one man is like two men versus one man. Right? And so therefore, here, since we're accepting one witness for death, therefore, we follow Rav Deo. And what we have here is one who said he died and one who said that he's still alive. And the other possibility is to say that when one witness comes who's a kosher witness, a regular male, adult, etc., in that case we would say that even though, in accepting Rav Nachman's statement, we're saying even though this is a case where we will accept invalid witnesses, nonetheless, if the witness is a valid witness, then they really do have a stronger hold. And as many people as you might have against them is still like one person. That the original witness who came was an Isha. And explained to Rav Nachman as follows. Meaning, two women versus one woman is like two men versus one man. In other words, where the Torah accepts Psule Eidut, they take on the same character as kosher eleidut, meaning if there's one versus two, it's really a one versus two. Avos shtei nashim bishachad, but if you have two women testifying against one man, kepalga palgadami, because the one man is considered to be like a kat, like a full group. In other words, what we're saying is that even though the halacha is that we accept only one witness for Edut Isha, nonetheless, if that witness is an otherwise kosher witness, they still have a stronger hold. And so the case here where Shmuel said that lo mechashato, lo tetze, is talking about a case where the original witness to come was a woman, and she testified that the person was dead, and then another woman comes and says, no, indeed, he's alive. And if she is not machisher, then it's like a double knockout, and almost like treu trei, and then she has to leave. If, on the other hand, she is machish, because only one witness, her own denial will be meaningful, therefore she does not have to leave. Okay, good. Tzricha get mizeh umizeh. We said she needs a get from both. Now, we asked the question, Bishlam Arishon, I understand why she needs a get from the first husband, the one who just showed up, because she was married to him, and now she can't be with him. Elamisheni Amai, what does she need a get from the second guy for? After all, the second marriage was totally invalid. What does she need a get from him for what purpose? Znut Ba'omahu, after all, it was just adultery. Not just, but there was no marriage there. Amravuna Gzera Shamayamru Girej Zevin Asazeh. Because people will see it. What are they going to see? They're going to see she was married to one man, then she's married to another man, and she's leaving the second man without a get. But even said Eshet Ish, Yot Seid Belo Get. They'll think that she was divorced by the first husband, married the second guy, and left him without a get. So Yachi Sefer Ektani Amrula Meit Ba'alech V'nit Kansha. So in the Sefer, in the next Mishnah, where it says that if they told her her husband died and she accepted Kiddushin, Hakach Ba'ala. In other words, she didn't live with the new guy at all. She accepted Kiddushin, and then her first husband showed up. Uter Lachzorlo, she can go back to her first husband. After all, nothing happened. Hatam Nami Nemagirish Zevakidish said, why aren't we concerned that people are going to think that her first husband divorced her and she accepted Kiddushin? They didn't say, Eshet Ish Yotza Shelo Beget, and you have the same concern that she's leaving the second guy without a get. So Leolam Baya Get, the truth is she needs a get. So Yachinim Sazem Machzer Gushatomi Shintarsa. So if that's the case, then she's getting a get from the second guy in the Seifa. In other words, she got a report that her husband died. She accepted Kiddushin from this new guy. And now she's just going back to her first husband. It looks like Machzer Gushato. The answer is Kurbiosi ben Kiper. Damar min Asur, Asur min Eirusin Muter. Kurbiosi ben Kiper is a shita about Machzer Gushato, which we will meet later on in Nashim. Which is that Machzer Gushato is only Asur if she actually married the other guy, but not if she got accepted Kiddushin. Good. Tamanik Tani Seifa Afal P. Shanatama Acharon Get Lopsala min Akuna. But wait a second. In the Seifa, it says even if the second guy gave her a get, she's not possible min Akuna, meaning that if her proper husband later dies, she's just an almana. Mechlal de la by a get. Obviously, it means she doesn't need a get. Because first of all, it says if he gave her a get, which means she doesn't need it. And second one, even if he did give it to her, it's not really a get. Amaylo Psalam min Akuna. Did he buy a get? Amaylo Psalam min Akuna. The answer is, because in the Seifa, how come if the first husband shows up, she can go back to him and there's no need for a get? Because people will think the Kiddushin were a mistake. Why won't people say the same thing in the case of Nisuin? They'll say the marriage was a mistake because she didn't know the husband was alive. The answer is Kansua Rabbanan. They made a knas against her for marrying the guy. Seifa Nami the Kansua, so make the knas there. The answer is very simple. Reisha Dav the Isura Kansua. In the Reisha, she married a guy. She violated Isurim. She was sleeping with another guy. Albeit she thought it was correct, but she went safe at the law of the Isura. In the Seifa, she only accepted Kiddushin. She never did any physical act that was illegitimate. So look at Sarabana. They didn't find her. They didn't necessitate a get. And they said she can go back to her first husband. Now, the last three lines here, very quickly, Ein Lak Tuba. We said she has no Ktuba from either. My time, Akhtina Larabana Ktuba. Why is there a Ktuba at all? So that it shouldn't be too easy for her husband to divorce her. Here we want him to divorce her, so we want the divorce to happen quickly because she shouldn't be with either husband. Therefore, there's no ktuba. Ein la perot v'lo mazonot v'lo blaot. She doesn't have any of those things. Why? Because tnai ktuba ktuba dami. Those things are all called tnai ktuba. They're sort of additions or necessary obligations that we obligate the husband to undertake, and they take on the same status as ktubah. She doesn't get a ktubah, she doesn't get these. Not la mizeh umizeh, if she took any of this money from the husband, either husband, she has to return it. Pshita, obviously, if she's not supposed to get it, then if she took it, she has to give it back. So ma'udatema kemen atav salam afkinami. Now, I would think that once she took it, we don't take it away from her because it might be sort of mamona mutubo safek. The answer is Kamash Falan, that no, that it really does belong 100% to the husband and to his family and not to her. And if she took it, she has to return it. Tov, this has been an inordinately long shiur, by about 20 minutes, longer than usual. So, Mirtz Hashem, we will pick up at this point in the next podcast and continue our study of the 10th parak of Yevamot. Everyone should have a wonderful day.